I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Sam Weeb joins me again. The celebrated and best-selling author has a new novel out. It's the sixth in the Wakeland series, Guns Across the River. It's been 10 years now since private investigator Dave Wakeland first appeared. I'll ask Sam about this fascinating character and what it's like revisiting him. Dave rescues somebody who's jumped off the Granville Bridge into False Creek near the houseboat that Dave finds himself living on. He's drawn into the world of Nicola Havoc, curious as to why she jumped. It's not an attempted suicide, as he'll soon find out, as she's running away from somebody. Dave and his partner Jeff Chen are pulled into a case that takes them throughout Vancouver and the Fraser Valley. There's a billion-dollar scandal and a gun-running operation. I'll get Sam to tell us as much as he'd like about this new novel, as well as the Metro Vancouver he depicts. Sam Weeb is the best-selling author of Ocean Drive, as well as the Wakeland novels, including Sunset in Jericho and The Last Exile. His work has won the Crime Writers of Canada Award, the Kobo Emerging Writers Prize, and a silver medal from the Independent Publishers Book Awards. He has been shortlisted for the Edgar, Hammett, Seamus, and City of Vancouver Book Prizes. Visit samweeb.com for more. This new book is published by Harbor. We spoke 2.5 weeks ago with Sam joining me from his home in New Westminster. Please welcome back to the Plante Online program, Sam Weeb. Mr. Weeb, good morning.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
Nice to talk to you again. I was just telling you before we started how much I'm enjoying Guns Across the River. I haven't finished it because I have the terrible habit of giving away things that I shouldn't give away in the course of an interview. But before we get to the book itself, I mean, it's been a decade since Invisible Dead came out. This is the sixth in the series, I guess, the sixth novel featuring Dave Wakeland. How long before the first book was published had you had an idea of wanting to set stories here? And was that around the same time that you conceived of the Wakeland character?
Yeah, it really came out of a love of private detective stories, you know, the classic Raymond Chandler stuff, and, you know, the 90s authors like Sue Grafton and Lawrence Block and Walter Mosley, just loving that type of, you know, character who's going out and visiting different social strata and different, you know, groupings in society and so forth. And then mixing that with Vancouver and the things that are going on here, and you know, just especially how much it had changed in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing that even as I read the book, I mean, there are things that have changed. There's a place where Dave goes on Kingsway, the ex-serviceman's bar. I live at Fraser and King Edward, but I went to school at Charles Dickens, which is, I think, two blocks from that place. And I used to see it for years, and I always wondered, you know, what went on there. And even when I was old enough to drink, I never stopped in, and I regret not having gone in because it's since closed. There's certain things that you pick out or drop into the story that are just fascinating, you know, the little cameos, if you will. Dave grabbing a bun at Newtown Bakery. I mean, these are things that you've done yourself, I guess, right, in the course of living here.
Oh, yeah. Most of it is, you know, based on experience and places that have gone. And also just places that, you know, are very Vancouver, but sort of the non-tourist places.
Yeah.
Like with Last Exile, the previous book, I really wanted to work in Tinseltown or International Village, just because I love how odd that place is. Like the movie theater is so great,
yeah.
And the cafeteria is just like, it has a vibe that no other place does. And you know, like in Guns Across the River, the British ex-serviceman's pub comes up, and then also Hastings Park, which is now gone.
I guess it, when you write and you write in things like this and depict the change that's happening around us, is it a way for you to cope with some of these changes, say?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. It's a way to cope, but also, you know, it's just one of the odd things about Vancouver, which is that while you're writing it, it's changing. So by the time the book comes out, it's already historical fiction. I didn't plan on Hastings Park closing, but you know, it closed as the book was going to press. So,
but back to when you conceived of all of this, and you conceived of the Wakeland character, which is so rich, and I'm going to ask you about him in just a second. Were you ever tempted to put Dave in a different era other than the present, say?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, cell phones and the internet and social media make storytelling harder.
Yeah.
They also just make the world uglier. I mean, they're just, you know,
yeah,
when you watch something and they're just on their phones, like, you're watching a movie and the characters are watching a small movie in their hand. It's, there's a real ugly, you know, trap to that. But that is kind of the world that we live in. And I feel like as much as it's ugly, there's something cool about, you know, trying to capture the world as it is in the detective story. And it's definitely harder with cell phones and the internet, but I think you can also tell stories that that maybe didn't exist or weren't available to authors, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago.
That's the thing about Dave. He's trying to cope with all of these changes. I mean, he lives in a houseboat, on a houseboat for a reason, because housing is expensive. But the thing that fascinates me about this character in reading him in now six books is he's got the streak of being cynical about a lot of things. But
yes,
at the same time, his sense of morality, his sense of doing what's right or what's good, that never seems to flag. I mean, sometimes it gets challenged. But for the most part, it's there, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's fair. But it's less a, I mean, I don't see it as like a do-gooder mentality as much as just, you know, trying to square his own actions with what he knows to be right. And just trying to find a way to make a living and stay in the city that allows him to go to bed, you know, with a reasonably clear conscience.
So one of my favorite things to do, and unfortunately it's only when, it seems, when relations come to town and I need to show them something of Vancouver, is to take a False Creek ferry from Olympic Village to, say, Granville Island or even further to the Planetarium. It's just a beautiful way to spend your day in Vancouver,
yeah,
especially when it's nice, these recent days when it's warm out or the sun's out especially. But the book opens with something less idyllic happening in False Creek.
Yes.
And
yes.
I guess, so Dave is moored, is that underneath the Granville Bridge?
It's close to that. We're close to Granville Island, yeah. It's called Sea Village, and it's an actual houseboat community.
And so he's had people over that night, and something happens. I guess jumpers, that's not uncommon, because I was hearing in the news recently about all these upgrades that they did to the Granville Bridge, where they demolished the two off-ramps on the downtown side. And there was a plan to put up a suicide barrier, but that wasn't included when they finished with the upgrades. But I guess that's not uncommon, is it?
No, sadly, it's quite common. And actually, the idea for the story came about from a couple of people separately telling me that they'd witnessed jumpers or people in the water. And it's, you know, in the book, it's not a jump motivated by suicide. I really didn't want to, you know, open that kind of story, but it appears that way at the start. And then we find out that this character, Nicola, is actually on the run and that this is a jump made out of desperation. But it's absolutely, a fact, and people that live there have witnessed that, sadly.
Dave takes such an interest in Nicola, not only in rescuing her from the water, but following up later on when she's in the hospital. He obviously doesn't know the whole story, so this says something about himself and his character, is just curiosity even, about getting a feeling that there's something there. I guess he's always had that. Has that sort of personality trait, right?
Yeah, he's extremely nosy, which I think It comes from me too. Like I do kind of want to know the story and the background, and you know, it's very easy to get you know, curious to the point of obsession with something, especially when the answer seems, you know, it seems significant and it seems like something that should be out in the open, but that no one's talking about. And this is a case where a teenager is injured and people are trying to get to her. And before he can even figure out what's going on, she herself has taken off and vanished.
There's a moment in the hospital, I guess when she's come to, and he's there. And I don't know, I can't remember who the other two people were, doctors or social workers or something of the sort. And so the three of them are thinking about what to do when they get in there. And it made me laugh out loud when one of them says, well, we don't want to be all three of us talking all at once. And then Dave says, like in a Robert Altman movie. Can't tell you how much I enjoyed that, Sam.
It's just on my mind from, I've been working on a nonfiction novel, or a nonfiction book about movies shot in Vancouver, and both McCabe and Mrs. Miller and Cold Day in the Park were shot here, so it must have been on my mind when I wrote it.
Yeah. There are other funny moments in the book. You know, I've always wondered about that, I don't even know how to pronounce it, is it Tyvek or Tyvek plastic that we always see cladding construction sites or buildings that are being remodeled? We see that a lot, obviously, in Vancouver because there's a lot of construction going on. Because I don't remember seeing that 20 years ago with the brand name on it, and I guess that's one of the smart things that they've done is that they've managed to. Because I was watching a Sarah Jessica Parker thing on HBO, that sitcom that she had recently, not the Sex and the City one, but the other one before that, and it's set in upstate New York. And sure enough, they're visiting a construction site, and it has that plastic brand on it. And I always thought it was just something, you know, local Vancouver, and then I realized, I guess it's probably not if it's, you know, if they're using it in upstate New York, right?
Yeah, it's such a weird thing because it's, I think it's Tyvek, but they're also the company that makes the, like, bunny suits for CSI, like, crime scenes and stuff, yeah. So... there's a weird synchronicity in that it's, you know, it's the thing you see when somebody's getting renovicted and an area is getting gentrified, and then also what you see in a crime scene.
Yeah, it's like that netting that they put around trees when you see that orange, bright orange netting, plastic netting, then you know something's up, right? Something's going to change in on that block. So the title of the book is Guns Across the River. So I naively didn't think that people still ran guns, but I guess that's still a big concern, isn't it?
Well, I think that, I mean, the short answer is yes, but also what's happened and what's the crime that happens in the book is connected to these ghost guns, which are kits that American companies have been making, which basically allow you to build your own gun at home. And because they're not technically firearms, they're not covered under firearm laws. And, you know, you have to buy a couple extra parts to finish it, and you have to, and you know, like, but if you do a little bit of extra stuff to it, you end up with, you know, an assault rifle and something that's not, you know, it doesn't have a serial number, and it just struck me as a very crazy development and very different than what I, you know, grew up with as far as like gun culture, like hunting or target practice or whatever. I mean, this seems very, you know, like the very business model seems disreputable to me.
Yeah, and so without giving anything away, Nicola is obviously had some connection to that enterprise, right?
Yes. Behind her disappearance and what's happened to her is a shipping container full of these ghost gun kits that have gone missing.
And so from there, Dave gets to see other parts of the Lower Mainland, or Greater Vancouver, if you will. Where else do you take us in this book?
Well, two of the big locations are Abbotsford which I just find a very interesting kind of community. I mean, it's very rural, it's very countrified, and yet similar to Vancouver in a lot of ways. So it's, you know, the very stereotypical vision is like Vancouver is like a place full of Starbuckses and Abbotsford's a place full of, you know, rednecks or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's sushi bars and, you know, like the oldest gurdwara in the Lower Mainland is in Abbotsford. And then there's redneck stuff in Vancouver too. So it was kind of interesting to talk about that. And then, he ends up on Barnston Island at one part, which is, in the middle of the Fraser River, accessible by ferry. And, honestly, it's just a cool little place I used to go to walk. And, you know, there's like a dairy farm there, and it's very rural. But I just also wanted to kind of throw in something more wild into the book. You know, just a place that hasn't quite been, you know, overdeveloped.
Yeah, it's like that. What's that island? Like Westham Island, where they couldn't get because someone hit the bridge at one point, and everyone was stranded on Westham Island in Delta. I guess. Years and years ago, those were all dairies, weren't they, on Barnston Island?
Yeah.
And so there is still a dairy there today, but it's just, I guess it's just farmland, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a First Nation reserve or territory there, and there's some small farms. But, I mean, you know, you get off the ferry, and there's, like, roosters. And as someone who grew up in, you know, Vancouver, that's quite a thing.
Yeah. And so you mentioned that you go there to walk. So you hop on the ferry. I guess the ferry's quite regular, right?
Yeah, it's like a very small boat towing, like, I think, you know, like a two or three car, you know, six car, you know, ferry. So you can just walk across or drive across. And then, like, you can walk the circumference of the island in a few hours.
Really? Huh. Well, I'm sure there'll be people who want to do that after they finish reading Guns Across the River. You talked about Abbotsford and a moment ago, and it just made me think of just how rich this greater Vancouver area is. I mean, Vancouver has great neighborhoods, right, that are different from one another. But, I mean, if you think about these little small cities or towns within Greater Vancouver, how different they all are from one another. I can see the appeal in writing a good crime story set in such a unique place, like Abbotsford, say.
Yeah, each one of those places has a little bit of a different energy and a different, you know, a different subculture. You know, speaking specifically about, like, gangs and organized crime. I mean, Abbotsford has, I mean, they've had this rash of, what do you call it, like extortion attempts recently. And, you know, there's like a South Asian gang culture, but there's also a weird, like, kind of multicultural gang culture that came up from, you know, people going to the same, like, karate, you know, like strip mall karate school or whatever. So, you know, it's pretty interesting. And, of course, it's close to the border, too. And so, you know, like a lot of the trafficking and stuff, you know, is affected by what happens in Abbotsford.
So you've managed to write about a number of these communities throughout Metro Vancouver and in these six books. Is there a place that you haven't gone to yet that you'd like to, say, explore in fiction, say?
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, every time I take a trip somewhere, there's something kind of interesting to write about. I mean, one of the places I just haven't quite figured out how to write about it is Point Roberts, which is... you know, across the border in Tsawwassen, and it's this very isolated U.S. community. A lot of Canadians live there, too, but, yeah. You know, I've been down there a few times, and it's absolutely lovely. I mean, there's eagles and all sorts of great beaches and walks, but, you know, there's allegedly a lot of interesting stuff that goes there. So, yeah, I'd love to write about that at some point.
Mm. Are there neighborhoods in Vancouver that you haven't yet explored in your writing, say?
Yeah, definitely. You know, South Fraser, South Victoria hasn't been in much. And, you know, a lot of these places are just different from, you know, where if they showed up in Invisible Dead, you know, which came out in 2016, I mean, you know, like the Oak Ridge neighborhood is totally different now.
Yeah.
So, and Kits is very different, and, you know, Commercial Drive is changing all the time. And I can't believe how much the subway is going to change the Broadway, that corridor. So, yeah, like there's definitely more neighborhoods that I want to write about and cover, but they're also just very different every time I go to them.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, I've lived here my whole life, and I was in Kits this past weekend to pick up a pie, a $54 pie. And I was walking on 4th, and you know, you'd see the doorways with all those beads, you know, covering the doorways, and then you know, people that look like hippies, and so it reminded me very much of, you know, this is what the 70s were like in this neighborhood, but I doubt pies were $54 then, you know.
Yeah.
So I read a lot of this book during a time when I possibly had jury duty. I didn't make the jury, but I had to clear my calendars, which was an inconvenience altogether. I read somewhere, and I can't remember where this was. I think it was in one of the press materials from a previous book, where you had served on a jury, and it was quite a long haul. Is that right?
Yeah. I was on a jury for a trial that, you know, once it was over and we came out of sequestration, mm-hmm. We learned that it had been tried before, and that earlier trial had been the longest jury deliberation in BC history. So,
wow.
It's something. I mean, people always talk about getting out of jury duty, but I thought it was very interesting and like worth doing, like just as a citizen.
And so, because it was a long time, I guess you got paid too. Is that right?
Yeah, you get paid a very small amount every day that you go to court. Actually, my wife Carly joked that you know, it's probably the only time when you know, somebody got paid more being a juror than being a writer. She's very mean, but you know, not inaccurate.
Yeah, because when I was telling everyone, whether it was at work or friends, that I was about to go do jury duty, they kept asking me, you know, what the deal was, right? Would I get fed, or would I get bus fare, or these things? I nearly got on a jury about 12 years ago. You know, they picked my number, but then it turned out that the guy who was being sued had been on this podcast talking about the book he was being sued on. And so I had to tell the judge that this is the situation, and she quickly waved me off. So I read in the newspaper later on that it was about a 2-week trial. So that would have been an inconvenience altogether. But anyway, when you're not on a jury, Sam, what's your day like? Because you're doing a lot of writing, not just fiction, but you know, you've got this upcoming book on film and television set in Vancouver, or done in Vancouver. It seems like you've got all these articles for Monte Cristo and other publications coming out every so often. In terms of your day, do you write with a schedule, say?
Yeah, when I'm working on a book, it's I'm up early. Like, my wife's an electrician, so she's out at 5 o'clock. So I'm up around 4:30, and I start as soon as she leaves, and I work till the afternoon, go get a walk in, and then do business and teaching and things like that. But it's pretty structured. But at the moment, not much. Just I finished my the draft of Shot in Vancouver, so I've handed that in, and I'm just kind of figuring out what the next project will be. But yeah, I'm typically a morning worker.
I can't remember. I think it was called Skip Tracer. Was that the name of the movie that you wrote about recently?
Oh, yeah. 1977.
Yeah, so I bought a copy of the DVD, and I did the thing where I wasn't paying attention to the story. I was just looking at the shot.
Yeah.
And then rewinding and sort of pausing on my computer. But where because there was one scene that took place at Broadway and Kingsway, and I go past that twice a day, five times a week. And it's unrecognizable today from then. But there was something that fascinated me about the parkade that was on the west side of the street, which is still the same as it was 50 years ago now, I guess. And so it was just fascinating to see the other side of the street and what that looked like. I guess it was a car dealership. I can't tell you how many things, because of whether it's articles that you've written or your newsletter, which you put out each week, books or movies that I've sought out because you've recommended them.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. I should point out, too, that if you got the DVD or Blu-ray version of Skip Trace, the guy who did the art for that designed the cover for Shot in Vancouver, the book that I wrote. So when that comes out in October, it's a great cover. His name's Andrew Barr, and he did posters for the Rio Theater and all sorts of rep cinemas. But just a great artist.
Yeah, it's a great. It is a Blu-ray, and it's sitting here in my desk. Actually, I haven't finished it yet, but I can't tell you how much I've been enjoying it, and it is a great. Piece of art. So other than Shot in Vancouver, this book that's coming out in the fall, are you working on another Wakeland novel?
Well, I have an idea for another one, but I'd like to do another standalone like Ocean Drive before that. So I'm just trying to figure out what that's going to be like. And I've got a couple of film and TV projects on the go, too. So it's sort of balancing a bunch of things, but also trying to figure out what the next novel should be about.
It must be great to be able to get back to Dave, because, you know, he left town for a spell, and then two books ago he comes back to Vancouver, and you're able to revisit him, I guess. He sort of lives with you, doesn't he?
Yeah, one of the things about this series is that, like, I did a poor job of planning it out, in a sense, and that usually with a series, you know, you have, like, two or three side characters that show up, and the character's kind of the same every book, and, you know, that similarity is what draws people in. But with Wakeland, what's exciting to me, and I hope to the reader, is that it's always different. Like, either he's coming back, or he's, gone through some sort of heartbreak, or he's in love, or his job is changing. Like, there's always some adjustment to him and his character. So I do like coming back to him, and I like coming back to the city, and there's always something different going on. So
you mentioned Ocean Drive. I had to look back, and the notices and the sales for that book were quite good, weren't they?
I think so. I'm so out to lunch on that stuff, but the feedback that I got was very, very good.
Yeah, I bought a couple copies for friends, and I've been looking for I can't remember. So one of the friends that I bought it for sent me this wonderful. Now I can't find it. It must have been a text message or an email, but I meant to share it with you, but I can't find it anymore. Just this wonderful message about how good they thought Ocean Drive was, and
that's so sweet.
And so when I looked that up just to, yesterday in preparing for a chat today and seeing what the reception was, I was very happy for you that it hit quite well.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was really nice to write something a little bit different, and just to have two characters, like a cop and a criminal, and to kind of go back and forth was a nice change of pace.
Well, I'm enjoying Guns Across the River a great deal. And whatever is next, you know I can't wait for it, because I'm a big fan. Good luck with this book, and all the best.
Thank you so much, Joseph, and thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
The website for more is at samweeb.com. This new book is called Guns Across the River. It's from Harbor Publishing, It's author Sam Weeb joined me on the line from New Westminster in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.